Parshas Vayetzeh contains one of the most dramatic interchanges in Chamisha Chumshei Torah, Yaakov's anger with Lavan for being accused of stealing his truffle. Lavan has just chased Yaakov down and accused him of sneaking away and then adding insult to injury of stealing his truffle. After Lavan fails to find the truffle, even though ironically Lavan was actually correct in his suspicions because Rachel had taken them, but after Lavan had seemingly been shown to have made an unjustified accusation, Yaakov is furious with him. Vayichar LeYaakov Ayarav BeLavan, and Yaakov proclaims his innocence and his honesty. And in the middle of his statement, he explains how honest he was with Lavan's sheep. He writes, "Ze Esrim Shana Anochi Imach, I have been 20 years with you. Rechelecha VeYizecha Lo Shikelu, your ewes and your goats have not miscarried. VeElitzoncha Lo Achalti, I have not eaten the rams of your sheep. Trefelo Hevesi Elecha, I have not brought you dead animals. Anochi Achatenam Yadi Tevakshena, I have indemnified you from all this loss. I have paid for it out of my own pocket. Gnufsi Yom, Gnufsi Laila, animals that were stolen by day or by night. Hayisi Vayom, Achalani Chara V'Karach Balaila, I was with your sheep. The scorching, I was scorched during the day and I was frozen at night. Atidat Shnasi Me'enai, and I didn't sleep. I stayed up watching the sheep. Zeli Estrim Shonam B'Veisecha." Yaakov tells Lavan, his outrage explains to Lavan how honest he was. Now, from these psukim, we actually learn some halachas of shamrim. Now, obviously, the primary halachas of shamrim are discussed in the legal sections of the Torah in Parshas Mishpatim. That is where the different kinds of shamrim are discussed and the different obligations of the different shamrim. But interestingly enough, from these psukim, we also derive various halachas of shamrim, as we shall discuss. In this lecture, we shall first give a basic introduction to the body of halacha and shamrim, discuss the different kinds of shamrim and their respective liabilities. We shall then discuss a number of questions of halacha shamrim of both theoretical and practical interest. Some of the questions especially are extremely common and come up in many real world cases of shamrim. So as we said, the primary halachas of shamrim are in Parshas Mishpatim, but we shall see that a number of the questions we discussed have their roots in the Psukim in Parshas Vayetzeh. So the Gemara and Bav Metzia explain that there are four kinds of shamrim, but really three. Two of them are in the same category. There are three levels of shamrim. Shamar Chinam has the lowest responsibility. He is only chayav for pshia. Shamar Sachar has an intermediate level of responsibility. He is chaya for gneva v'aveda, for theft and for loss, and certainly pshia, but nothing more than that. A shoel is considered the highest level of shamar, the one with the greatest responsibility. He is liable for everything, what the Gemara calls for ansim. There are a couple of exceptions, shmira v'vailam and meis machas malacha. We will discuss meis machas malacha hopefully later. But basically, these are the three levels from lowest to highest. Shamar chinam is only chayav in pshia. Shoel is chayav basically in everything. And Shamar Sachar is chayiv in Gneva, Aved, and Pshia, but Pater from Onsim. Now, as we said, there are actually four Shamarim, because the Gemara says a Selcher is the fourth category of Shamar, a Selcher being a renter. There is actually a Machlokas in the Gemara, but we Paskin, according to all Poskim, virtually all Poskim, that a Selcher is like a Shamar Sachar. So one who rents has the same rules as a Shamar Sachar. He is chayiv for Gneva and Aveda, for theft and loss, but Pater from other Onsim. Now, the Gemara also explains that there are certain other situations that are also classified with Shamar Sachar. There are at least three or four other examples. They are Uman being an artisan, but basically it means any employee, any paid worker who's working with the property of someone else, he has the status of a Shamar Sachar with regard to that property. We already mentioned Sachar. Another example is a Shamar Mashkan. One who takes collateral from a debtor, a creditor who takes collateral for a debtor, he's responsible to ensure the safety of the property that he's taken. And there's actually a shayla in the Gemara, machlokas Rav and Rav Yosef. There's a big machlokas we show on how we paskin, but some poskim paskin that he is a shomer socher. Why exactly are a socher, an uman, and a shomer mashkan, why are they shomer socher? So the answer is not entirely clear. Selcher and Uman, the Gemara, the Rishonim, the Achronim propose various svaras. One svara is that the socher has benefit because he got to rent the thing. Someone else might not have rented it to him. It's a privilege to be able to rent something. That itself is considered as though he's receiving some sort of schar. Uman, the Gemara has a similar svara, that he got the job. Jobs are, especially in some economies, jobs are scarce. Jobs are valuable. Then the post can bring other svaras. The Uman, for example, the post can bring a svara that he's toughest le'a agre, that because he has security in the object, and the object he's working on, security for his hire, that itself is considered compensation. So there are various svaras why socher and uman are considered shomer socher. But basically the idea is that even though they are not receiving direct compensation for watching the object, they are considered to be receiving ancillary benefit of some sort, and that is why they are a shomer socher. Shomer mashkan, the Gemara has a svara, famous svara of Pruta de Rav Yosef. Because Osik mitzvah patur mina mitzvah, and while he's either while he has the mashkan or while he's taking care of the mashkan, machlokes rishonim, he's patur from giving tzedakah ta'anim. That itself is considered, perhaps a little cynically, but that's considered a benefit, saving money from giving tzedakah. So that's also another example of an ancillary benefit that makes him considered shomer sachar, to be someone who's paid for watching, and that's why he has the heightened responsibility of a shomer sachar. So as we've seen, there are basically three shomerim, three categories of shomer: shomer chinam, shomer sachar, and shoel, and three levels of responsibility: pshia, one; gneva v'aveda, two; and onsim is three. The truth is, gneva and aveda are not actually the same. The Gemara in Bava Metzia explains that gneva is considered krova la'ones, and aveda is considered krova l'pshia, meaning gneva is considered almost an ones. Maybe you might have been able to avoid it, but it's basically not your fault. Aveda, on the other hand, is close to pshia. It might not be as bad as gross negligence, but if you lost it, we assume you were somewhat careless. Nevertheless, they both form an intermediate category between pshia and ones, and a shomer sachar is chayav for both of them, and certainly for pshia, although he's patur for onsim. The truth is, there is an area in halacha where we do distinguish between gneva and aveda. That is the opinion of Tosfos and Bava Kamma and Daf Chav Zayin. We know there's a principle that adam mu'ad la'olam. When it comes to Adam Amazik, not Shomer anymore, Adam, a person who actually damages something directly, he's Mu'ad La'olam, he's Chayav even for Onsim. But is he really Chayav for all Onsim? Tosfos and other Rishonim quote many Gemaras that indicate that there are certain cases where it's just considered not his fault, and he's Potzer. How do you reconcile that with the principle of Adam Mu'ad La'olam? Tosfos says that there are some Onsim that he's Chayav and some that he's Potzer. And Tosfos actually says, based on the distinction we just mentioned, that he's chayev in ones kein aveda, which is like pshia, but he's potter in gneva, which is considered ones which is krova l'ones. He's chayev in aveda, which is krova l'pshia, and potter in gneva, which is krova l'ones. So Tosfos actually says that comes out that a mazik is essentially halfway like a shomer sachar. Shomer sachar is chayev in both gneva and aveda, while Adam Amazik is chayev for aveda, but potter for gneva. That's also, it's worth mentioning that the way we've been describing the situation, gneva and aveda essentially refer to levels of culpability. Gneva is one step above from onus, aveda is two steps above from onus and closer to pshia, but one step below pshia, and pshia is the highest. What about gneva, which is actually an onus? What if the person put it in a safe and hired guards and stayed up all night, and nevertheless something happened, and a freak thing happened, and he got sick or something, that we showed him, say, the various cases where there was a gneva which was completely, totally not his fault? This is the question called gneva b'onus. This is a big machlokes rishonim, and poskim also how we paskin. Some rishonim said, once the Torah obligated a shomer sachar in gneva, the Torah did not distinguish. The Torah meant any gneva, even if it is onus gomer, an absolute onus. Other Rishonim say no. It only means that level of culpability. If he's somewhat careless, the level which is typical of gneva, he's chayev. But gneva bonus, he's potter. So that's machlokas. But be that as it may, everyone agrees he's chayev in normal gneva, and there's a shaila whether he's chayev even in gneva bonus. So up till now, we've discussed four levels of responsibility. Pshia, gneva, aveda, and onus. There's actually a fifth level of responsibility, which doesn't actually fit into the scale neatly, which is kind of a parallel level of responsibility. It's very unclear exactly how it fits into the scale. That is the obligation called the Tirusa Yiserta. This is based on a Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Tzadi Gimel. Ymar talks about a shepherd who was herding animals across a river, and one of them jostled another and fell into the river. So the question is he chayev or potter for this? So Ymar brings him a machlokas. The Mar at one point says, what could he have done? What more could he have done? So the Mar says, well, he could have led them across single file, which would have minimized the risk of accident. So the Mar says, is that normal? Is that a realistic way to take care of animals? So the Mar says, no, it's not normal, but it's called a tirusa yiserta. It's called a higher level of care, a heightened level of responsibility. So does a shomer have to do that? So the Mar goes back and forth, and the maskana of the Gemara is that a shomer chinam does not have to do that. But a Shomer Sachar does have to do that. The Gemara explains that a Shomer Sachar is chayav because the owner can tell him, L'hochi yavi l'cha agra, that's why I paid you, l'nturi l'nturusi yiserta, in order that you should have a heightened level of responsibility of taking care of the animals. And that's how we paskin, according to most of, you know, almost all poskim, that a Shomer Chinam does not have this level of l'nturusi yiserta, and a Shomer Sachar does. It's not entirely clear from the poskim where l'nturusi yiserta would fit on the scale we mentioned earlier of Pshia, Aveda, Gneva, and Ones. And it's not even clear how we define the Tirusi Yiserta. There are many cases in the poskim where a posik will say, in the discussing a specific incident, that he fails this in the Tirusi Yiserta, but we are not really given any guidance or any definition for what the Tirusi Yiserta is. There is a comment in the Marshach, in the Marchasht, in the Chuvas of Rechaim Shapsi, Reese says that any time that he could have done more, in some meaningful, realistic way, he could have done more, he is not considered to have fulfilled the requirement of Tirusi Yiserta. Reb Moshe has a case, which we'll discuss a little bit later, about a shochet to a shechting chickens, and he opened the door to the coop, and a chicken flew out, and Reb Moshe discusses what level of culpability that is, and at one point he says if he left the door open, even if it was because he had to get more chickens, if he could have closed the door after each bird, even though that would be kind of tedious, that would be called Tirusi Yiserta. So we aren't really given any proper definition or any clear guidelines, but in many cases the poskim will, discussing a certain level of negligence or of sort of negligence, they will say this is Tirusi Yiserta. Now, Tirusi Yiserta, actually, the Gemara's discussion figures into those psukim in Vayetze with which we opened. The Gemara discussing Tirusi Yiserta, the Gemara, whether a Shomer Chinam has such a responsibility, the Gemara says, well, Yaakov told Lavan that he stayed up all night, and staying up at night or staying up at odd hours sounds like the Gemara said the Tirusi Yiserta, and Yaakov said he did it. So the Gemara says, no, Yaakov was just saying that he did it, even though a Shomer wouldn't really have to do it. Yaakov was saying, look how honest I was, look how faithful I was, I did such a, I was so careful with your animals that I even stayed up at night, although a Shomer does not have to stay up at night. So what is the halacha? Do we paskin that a shomer has this level of responsibility of staying up at night or not? So in the Shilta Tzravachai, on Parshas Vayetzeh, where he has a long essay on shomerim, an important essay on shomerim based on these psukim, he says, yes, indeed, a shomer sachar is chayev to stay up at night. He writes, il netirutz il neture ba'agra shlimulei, if the shepherd was paid to watch the animals. So he says, he says flatly, he must remain with it day and night watching the animals. Now, in the commentary of the Sheila Shalom, that's Rav Yishai Berlin, Rav Yishai Pick's commentary on the Shiltas, he says, what do you mean? The Gemara says that Yaakov was not obligated to, and he just said that he was telling Lavan that he acted lefnimishur hasadin. So why does the Shilta say that a Shomer Sachar has to do this? The answer is obvious, and the answer is given by the Tafas Reim, as well as Mirsky and his Sheiltas, that the Gemara said Yaakov did not have to do it in the Havamina before the Gemara decided that a Shomer Sachar has Netirusi Yiserta, when the Gemara thought that nobody had Netirusi Yiserta. But Lamaskana, where a Shomer Sachar does have the obligation of Netirusi Yiserta, and Yaakov was a Shomer Sachar because he was taking a cut from the animals, he was taking the spotted or the speckled or according to the different deals he made with Lavan, Yaakov was a Shomer Sachar, and therefore Yaakov did have an obligation of Netirusi Yiserta. So Lamaskana of the Gemara, Yaakov would have to remain with the sheep, and the Shomer Sachar, the Shiltas, therefore says, must remain with the sheep day and night. Now, there's a very important question, a major machlokas in the Achronim. We mentioned earlier that there are three or four other categories, situations, that have the same status of Shomer Sachar, specifically Uman, an artisan, Socher, a renter, and a Shomer Mashkin, the holder of collateral. Now, when we say they are Shomer Sechar, we certainly mean the primary chiyuv of Shomer Sechar, that they are chayav for Gneva. What about Netirus Yeserta? Do these categories of Shomer, are they like a Shomer Sechar entirely, and they also have the responsibility of Netirus Yeserta, or not? This is a major machlokas among the Achronim, primarily the Svardim. There is a Shuv in the Marshach, in Chelek Bey's Simon Kuf Samach Tes. Marshach says that Rashomer Mashkon does not have the responsibility of Netirus Yeserta. And the truth is, and only a real Shomer Sechar does, Rashomer Mashkon does not. And the truth is that this position of the Marshach was adopted by many subsequent Achronim, many Svardim, some Ashkenazim, Rav Shabsi Yona, and the Shaila Mara Simon Tezvav, the Shar Ephraim, and Simon Kuf Chav Beis, the Maram Ibn Chaviv, and a Tshuva print in the Ginas Vradim, Klal Aleph Simon Aleph, Rav Moshe Amarillo, not sure how to pronounce that, Aleph Mem Reish Yud Lamed Yud Vav. He was the author of the Dvar Moshe. This Tshuva is printed in his father's Sefer, Kerem Shlomo, Simon Pehe. Chaim Sofer also, although I don't think he mentions the Marshach, says essentially the same point in Tshuva in Chosh Mishpat, Simon Tazayin, Brokpa the Pesche Tshuva, and Simon Shin Gimel. And the Maram Shek in a Tshuva in Chosh Mishpat, Maram Shek also in a Tshuva in Chosh Mishpat, Simon Mem Ches. There are those who reject this principle, who disagree. They are the Ginas Radim himself in Klal Aleph Simon Beis, the Mishnah Lamelach in Hilchas Chirus, the beginning of Perik Yud, and in Rikiv Agir in the Gilian Shulchan Aruch in Simon Ayin Beis. In Simon Ayin Beis also, the Ksos, Pesach Tshuva discuss the principle further. So there are many Achronim who accept it, there are some who reject it also. Incidentally, the Tshuva of Ramosha we mentioned before, which is in Chosh Mishpat, Chelek Aleph, Simon Samach Tes, and the end of the Tshuva, Ramosha actually proposes such a svar on his own without citing any of the literature on it. He was discussing the case of a chicken that escaped from the Shochet, and Ramosha was suggesting that the Shochet's level of negligence would have been roughly equivalent to Netirus Yeserta. So Ramosha says, well, the Shochet is, even though he's like a Shomer Sechar, because he's a Neuman, he's getting paid for the Shechita, but maybe he shouldn't have the Chiyuv and Netirus Yeserta. And then Ramosha says, it's a nice Svara, the Svara makes sense, but Kevan Dloriisi, Chiluk Zeva Poskim, I have not seen this distinction in the Poskim. We can't say this on our own. Ein lo lomer me'atzmeinu, even though it's a svar nechona. Tshuva of Ramosha is one of the most difficult, problematic tshuvas of Ramosha or anyone else I've ever seen. Ramosha would have said he holds of it, fine. He doesn't hold of it, also fine. But to say he likes a svar, but he didn't see it in the poskim, where we've listed off about a dozen achronim who discuss it, including basic commentaries on the page of the Shulchan Aruch, like the Pesach Tshuva and the Rikiv Agir and the Ksos, very hard to understand what Ramosha meant here. I'll call upon him, as we have said, it is a major machlokes achronim. The truth is, though, that there's another very important point, which was not realized by all the Achronim, that there is actually a major machlokas among the earlier Achronim, what the Marshach actually meant. As we've seen, there are at least four cases of Shomer Sechar, four cases that have the status of Shomer Sechar. Shomer Sechar proper, Shomer Mashkan, Socher, and Uman. So when the Marshach said that a Shomer Sechar does have responsibility of Netirus Yeserta, as per the Gemara, and a Shomer Mashkan does not, what did he mean? Did he mean all cases do except Shomer Mashkan, which was for some reason different? Or did he mean that all cases don't except for a Shomer Sechar proper who does? So many Achronim understood the latter possibility, that only Shomer Sechar who's actually paid directly, explicitly for watching the property has the heightened responsibility in the Netirus Yeserta, but all the other cases, Sechar, Uman, and Shomer Mashkan, do not. This is what Chaim Sofer seems to learn, and this is the Chaim Sofer and the Marash Halevi and the Mashmos of the Shaar Ephraim all seem to be that all the ones that are like Shomer Sechar do have this, except Shomer Mashkan, which is different. Some Achronim say that only Shomer Mashkan does not, because the Hana of Prutid Rav Yosef is a very, very small, very minor, very incidental hana, but all other cases do. That's the opinion of the Shaila Mora and others. There are others, though, who say that only Shomer Sechar, this is the Chaim Sofer's position, only Shomer Sechar does because he's getting explicit schar, but others who have the din of a Shomer Sechar do not have the responsibility. This is the opinion of the Chaim Sofer, and this is also the opinion of the Maram Chaviv, apparently, in his tshuva. And the Ramosha Marilov and the Parak Shushan disagree with the Maram Chaviv because they hold that it applies to all cases of Shomer Sechar except Mashkan, like the Shalomara, but the Chaim Sofer and others held not. So this is another major, so we have a Machlokas, whether we accept the Marshach at all, if we do accept from our Shach, we have Machlokas, what he meant, whether he meant that only Sharm Ashkan does not have the level of Atrusi Yisarta, or he meant that even Uman and Secher do not have that responsibility. And obviously, you know, Sharm Ashkan may not be the most common case in the world, but Secher and Uman frequently come up. If a Secher or an Uman, if damage occurs to the property while in their possession, and we deem them to have fallen short of Atrusi Yisarta, are they chayiv or not? That is a machlokas between these achronim, and it's a big machlokas, and probably you cannot be moti money because it would be a sveka d'dina. I subsequently found in the Sefer Maisa Uman of Rav Shlomo Zalman Mark, he also discusses this point that there is a major machlokas of achronim whether Mashach meant only Sharam Ashken has no Nitrusi Yisarta or all these other categories in his Sefer Maisa Uman, Paragimel, paragraphs Aleph through Dalad, and notes Dalad through Yud Beis, Biurim Simon Hay. But then he also says it would be a Sveka Dina, and the Mokhtar could say Kimli. Okay. So, moving on to another question. This is a basic theoretical question in Hilcha Shomrim. A Shomer Sachar, as we've seen, gets paid. A classic Shomer Sachar gets paid directly for watching. Now, we have two ways to understand the contractual arrangement between the Shomer Sachar. First of all, we should point out that a Shomer Sachar, besides having heightened responsibility, he's chayav for Gneva and Aveda and Tirus Yisarta, he also, perhaps this should go without saying, but the Chum Sofer says the Beferish, he also actually has to watch the object. He can't simply say, I'm like an insurer, I'll have extra responsibility, but I don't plan to actually watch the object. If it gets lost, so sue me and I'll pay you. But in the meantime, I'm not going to bother taking care of it. Chum Sofer says, absolutely not. He says, a Shomer Sachar has no right to say, Mali Bekachem Yavad, Ashlomana, what do you care if it gets lost? I'm good for the money. Chum Sofer says no, because the owner can say, I want my chayfetz, I don't want cash, I want my actual property. We actually find a similar svar in Nizkishchenim. You're not allowed to put, let's say, an oven or flammable objects too close to your neighbor's property, according to certain rules in Shiurim. And the Mefarshim explain, even if we're going to hold you liable to pay for it, b'di'evan, and even if you're willing to pay for it, you still can't do it l'chatchila, because the neighbor can say, I don't want my house to burn down, I don't care if you're going to pay me for it, I want my house, I don't want the cash. So here also the Chum Sofer says, the owner can say, it's not enough that you're going to be chayiv. Yes, you'll be chayiv. Yes, I'll sue you if it gets lost, but that's not enough. I also want to force you, ab initio, I want to force you to be responsible and watch it as you are supposed to. And the Chum Sofer actually infers this from the Psukim again of Yaakov that we started out with. He says a very interesting raya. He says Yaakov was proud. He told Lavan proudly, Hayisi bayam achalani chara v'karach balayla. I was moser nefesh. You know, I was frozen and I was scorched and to take care of your animals. So says the Chum Sofer, who cares? Yaakov was responsible for any loss to the animal. He wants to stay and watch. He doesn't want to stay and watch. That's his own business. If he's interested in watching or not. Either way, once he already said treifloi vesilacha, I indemnified you from all loss. What was he adding by saying I stayed up at night? He was that was simply for his own benefits. He shouldn't have to be responsible for the animals. So the Chum Sofer says Yaakov was saying that in addition to indemnifying you, I also made sure that I watched you. And I didn't just rely on the fact that I would pay you after the fact. So a shomer has responsibility to actually watch and not just promise to pay if the property gets lost. Now, Chum Sofer actually goes on to say, similar to the distinction we had earlier, that a Shomer Mashkan does not have this responsibility. He is going to be chayev to indemnify the owner against loss, but he does not have the responsibility to actually stay up and watch more than a Shomer Chinam, because again, similar to the svar as we said before, because he's not actually receiving explicit tzchar, then there's no understanding that he's going to watch like that. The Chazal said he has extra responsibility because he has ancillary benefit, but because he isn't being paid directly to watch, he does not actually have this extra responsibility to stay up and watch. This is the Chum Sofer in his Tshuvos, again, Chash Mishpat, Simon and Zayin. So now, with this background, we can ask a question. We can ask actually four questions. Basically, we want to know, how do we understand the payment of a Shomer Sachar? Are you paying him for being responsible to watch, and because he's responsible to watch, therefore he's going to have liability for loss? Or do we say the opposite? You're paying him primarily for the insurance, and he also has the responsibility to watch. How do we understand the payment? Is it for his responsibility to watch, or is it for his acceptance of liability that he's going to be responsible if it gets lost? And we can actually ask, you know, in terms of concrete questions, we can actually ask four different interrelated questions here. Let's say, for example, the Shomer Sachar is negligent and the property is destroyed. So he has to pay. Can he say, okay, I'm paying you, but at least I want to get my schar? I mean, I'm paying you, so I'll pay you the $1,000 the property was worth, but you pay me the $100 that you agreed. It was lost, but you're getting paid for the loss, so pay me the money that you owe me. Or do you say, no, you were hired to watch, and you didn't do your job. Why should you get paid if you didn't do your job? Similarly, let's say the property did not get lost. The Shomer left it lying on his front lawn recklessly, but he was lucky, or NASAP, and it didn't get taken away. So can the Shomer say, I was willing to pay you for it if it got lost. I was responsible. Here's your chefetz back. You're. What's the difference to you if I stayed in my hammock and left it on my front lawn, or I locked it in a safe? You're the same either way. Or can the owner say, no, you didn't do your job. Why should you get paid? Similar to the previous question. These questions are actually not discussed in the basic early poskim. There are two other questions, though, which are discussed. These are basically almost explicit in a Gemara. Let's say the property was lost by onus or b'pshia, but let's say he's not, but in either of these two cases of onus and pshia, for some reason the shomer is not chayev. The classic case is going to be because it was karka or hektish, and that's a halacha that shomerim are not chayev for damage to hektish or karka. So there isn't going to be any compensation paid to the owner. Can the shomer still demand his char? This is basically mefurish in the Gemara. The Gemara talks about the shluchim who would carry machzah shekels from the contributors to the Beis HaMikdash. So it says that if the shkolim get lost, if they claim that the shkolim were taken from them by onus on the way, they have to swear. The Gemara says, why should they swear? They have no liability because it's hektish. So the Gemara says, they swear in order to collect their schar. So the Magen Mishnah points out, Magen Mishnah is in Chachas Perik Beis, Halacha Beis, and Propa Neshach, and Chashim Mishpat, and Siman Shin Gimel, Tzivkot Nehei, and Vesman, and Siman Shin Dal, Tzivkot Gimel. You see from the Gemara, we basically see two things. That if they were negligent, even though they're not going to have to pay because it's hektish, they still forfeit their schar. But if they were not negligent, then they are entitled to collect their schar. So these two cases are pretty well accepted by the poskim. As we said, it's virtually explicit in the Gemara. There's another din, which this one actually is a machlokes achronim. The halacha is that any shomer can stipulate to have a different level of liability than he normally would have. A shomer sachar, for example, can stipulate up front, I don't wish to have the heightened liability of a shomer sachar, I want to be like a shomer chinam. So let's say a shomer sachar does that, and then he fails to watch, he does not watch like a shomer sachar, and sure enough, it got stolen. So he's not chayit because that was the stipulation. Can he collect his char? So a number of achronim say, no, he forfeits his char because he didn't watch. So even though he's not going to have liability, but since Lamaisa he didn't watch, there's no reason he should get his char. That is the shita of Rav Aaron Sasson and the Taras Emes, and Chuvas Taras Emes, Siman Ayin Gimel, Shach accepts this, and Siman Shin Hei, Sivkot and Beis, and the Sivas, and Siman Shin Alephs, and the Sivkot and Hei. Nachman Ephraim disagrees and says, no, a regular Shomer Sachar who has full liability also has full responsibility to watch. This guy who deliberately said, I don't want to be responsible like a Shomer Sachar, I don't have to do this level of washing either. Why am I taking schar for the basic shmir or just for the storage space? But I didn't fall short of my responsibilities. My responsibilities were only to be a shomer chinam, and you agreed to pay me for that. So he's entitled to the full schar, even though he did not wash like a shomer sachar and it got stolen. But now returning to the most interesting cases, the first two questions we raised before. Let's say a shomer sachar doesn't wash and got lucky, and it was. And unfortunately, it wasn't stolen. Or let's say it was stolen and he's paying for it. What's the halacha? So in the latter case, where it got stolen and he's paying for it, this we find achronim coming down all over the map. Again, the early achronim don't discuss this, and it comes up kind of in fairly obscure corners of the poskim. The Ktzos and Hilchos Arnoah, actually, and Reish Chav Zayin, Sivkot Nid Aleph, takes for granted that not only does the Shomer Sachar have to pay for the item that was lost, stolen, he also forfeits his char. This is also the opinion of the Sefer Yad HaMelech on the Rambam in the end of the Sefer in the Tosefes and Yonim Hashayachim L'Hilchos Chiras Perik Beis Halacha Beis again. And this is also the opinion of the Maria Sad in his Tshuvas Yehuda Yala and Choshen Mishpa Reishit Aleph. Rick Rager, on the other hand, takes for granted exactly the opposite. Lixeus just kind of, as we said, just kind of assumes that he forfeits his schar. The other two, the Anamelech and Maria Sad, actually have long pilpulim, but that's how they come out, that he is chayev. He forfeits his schar. Rick Veger just assumes, without bringing Raya, just the opposite, that if he pays for the property, then he gets his schar. That's he's entitled to his schar, he pays for it, and then he gets his schar. Rav Elio Ragoler, in his Tshuvas Yad Elio, doesn't know. He raises the question and says he has no proof, and he doesn't know. Rav Gregor is in the Ksav HaChosim, Chelek Aleph, Tshuvas V'Chidushim, Simon Yudalad, and the Simon Yudalad, and Rav Elio Ragoler is in his Yad Elio, Chelek Aleph, Simon Kuf Yudalad. Merel Diskin makes a very interesting point. He wants to suggest that there wouldn't really be such an afkamina between these two opinions. They're both really boiled down to the same thing, he says, because even according to the opinion that he forfeits his char, he says, he still would come out essentially collecting his char. Why? Because he can tell the owner of the property, what do you want to do? Let's say the object is worth $1,000 and the shmira was worth $100. So first he writes a check for $1,000 for the value of the object. Then he tells the owner, wait a second. If you would have gotten your object back, you would have written me a check for $100. So you would have only had $900 of value left. Now you're getting $1,000. Is that fair? You should end up with $1,000? No, he says. He says, since to get $1,000, it would have cost you $100 in shmira costs, so you really only had an asset worth $900. So I'm going to deduct from my $1,000 the $100 that you would have had to pay to keep your object. This far is not so pashut. Merel Diskin then tries to bring Raya from Shas. In general, what do we do if Reuven damages an object of Shimon, and Shimon's object was priced on the market for some price, say $1,000, but he only could have realized $1,000 after expending some cost on bringing it to market, or marketing it, or hiring someone to sell it or something. But he would have had costs incurred in order to realize that revenue. So how do we evaluate the price of that object? The full $1,000, or do we take off the cost that he wouldn't necessarily have to incur to realize that money? That's a shaila. So depending on that, that would determine whether there's really any nafkamina between the two shitas in the achronim that we mentioned before. The other case we mentioned, closely related, if it wasn't stolen, but he simply didn't watch it, he left it lying around, but he got lucky and it wasn't taken. This one, I haven't seen any achronim who actually have a definitive stand on this. Rick Reger himself, elsewhere, in his Chedushim on Shavuos, printed in the new blue Rabbi Kiveger's Daf Mem Test, page Reish Pei, he doesn't know. He says, he basically expresses the Shaila Yeshlef topic, as we said before. He says, he expresses it very elegantly, he says, do we say that he's Chayev and Kenevan Aveda because he gets paid, but he's getting paid for watching, in which case, if he didn't watch, he doesn't get paid. Or do we say just the opposite? He's getting paid for his insurance, for agreeing to indemnify the owner. It makes no difference if he watches or not. As long as he's responsible for the loss, he deserves to get paid. McGregor does not know. Rabbi Leo Ragoler also, in the same tshuva that we mentioned before, also mentions this shalat too, and he doesn't know the answer to this one either. So I have not seen any acharonim who explicitly take a position on a clear stance on this question. Another question, El Chashamrim, a very interesting question, which comes up l'maisa, often enough. This one, I know of a couple of Acharonim who discuss it, and they don't agree, but I haven't really seen any systematic discussion of this in the Poskim. There's a basic principle in the Poskim which is universally accepted, based on statements of Chazal, Rishonim, and Acharonim. The principle is called B'shalohu Rashoi, V'ena Rashoi, B'shal Acherim. Do what you want to your own property, but don't think that gives you license to do that to other people's property. The Shulchan Aruch says, in Siman Reish Tzadi Aleph, discussing the basic halachas of Shomrim and Sif Yudalad, that a Shomer who does not meet the objective standards set forth by Chazal, the Rishonim, the Acharonim, the Poskim, for Shomer is Chayev, even if he says, that's the way I keep my own property, that is the way I watched yours just as carefully as I watched my own, makes no difference. The standard we use for evaluation of culpability is objective standards. They are objective standards, and his own subjective levels of concern are not relevant. And again, the principle is, im ein amakim roi l'shmira chayev. Again, b'shalohu rashoi, v'ein rashoi b'shal acherim. Do what you want to your own property. That does not give you license to do this to other people's property. So, this is all very well. If you do that to your property, that doesn't give you license to do that to the property you're holding for somebody else. What if the owner of the property himself is careless with his property? You know that he often leaves his door unlocked. You know that this is the way he treats his property. Do you have, can you say, okay, if that's what you do, I don't have to be more careful than you? Or do you say, no, his own property is his. You're a shomer. You have objective requirements set forth by Chazal. This is a machlokas aposkin. Rav Yosef Askafa, great Turkish posik from the 17th century, mentioned by Rabbi Kveger. This is in his sefer, his Chuvas Rosh Yosef, Simon Gimel, Daf Zayin in the sefer. Rabbi Kveger is Mitzayin, it's on the Shach, Sivkot Niyates, and Reish Tadi Aleph. He had a case where somebody, a shomer, who's actually a shomer mashkin, had the mashkin, he had clothing, garments, he kept them in a box. Now, halacha is boxes are considered bad places for clothing because the rats, the mice get in and they gnaw them and they ruin them. You're not supposed to keep clothing in a box. You're supposed to keep them hanging from racks or other places where the mice and rats can't get them. Obviously, this depends on the environment, but in certain cases, you're not supposed to keep clothing in boxes. So the shomer mashkin did that. And sure enough, they were damaged by rodents. And his excuse was, I saw you. I took the box from you. You kept the clothing there. You kept clothing in the box. You don't care. Why should I care? Why should I keep them more carefully than you? And the Rosh Yosef says, Rav Askafa says, that's a great claim. That is a winning claim. He brings a raya. What's his raya that this is a valid claim? He says, the halacha is normally a shomer is not supposed to transfer the object into the custody of anyone else. One exception is that if we know that the owner of the object himself is willing to trust a certain person, then the shomer has a good excuse for doing so, and the owner cannot come to him and say, you shouldn't have done that, and therefore you have certain liability. The guy can say, no, you trust this guy, so I can trust him too. So the Rav Askafa says, same thing here. You're telling me I shouldn't keep her in a box. You use a box. What's the difference if you give it to a certain person or you put her in a box? If you do it, I can do it too. That is the position of the Rosh Yosef. The Har HaKarmel, though, the Chuvas Har HaKarmel and Siman Tes and Chazon Mishpat, he takes the opposite position. He says that no, that just because the owner did it, that does not give you, the shomer, a right to do it. His case was a very interesting case. His case was someone had borrowed a book. And in this area, the government had a law that books had to have stamps, some kind of tax or regulation by the government. And if a book did not have a tax, it was subject to confiscation by the government. So Reuven borrowed a book from Shimon. Shimon's book did not have a stamp. Reuven didn't put one on himself. Sure enough, government inspectors came into Reuven's house while he had the book borrowed. They confiscated the book. Shimon said, I need the book back. You owe me the book. Reuven said, no, it's not my fault. It didn't come with a stamp. You didn't put a stamp on. Why should I put a stamp on? So the Har HaKarmel said, nope, not an excuse. First of all, he was a shoel there. He discusses shoel and doesn't have a pter of onus. But even without that, he says, Shomrim in general, even without a shoel, Shomrim have no excuse. They cannot plead that the owner himself didn't do this, so why should I? That is not an excuse. And he applies the klal of before, b'shalohu rashoiv lo b'shal chavero. I can do it to my own property, you can't do it to my property. And he rejects the raya from a shomer who gives to someone else who is trusted by the owner. He says, over there, if the owner trusts him, that doesn't mean the owner is being reckless. That means the owner knows this guy and knows he's trustworthy. But if the owner is doing something which we know is reckless, he doesn't have any special information about the safety, about the rats. He's just willing to be reckless. He's just willing to not put a stamp and risk the government confiscation. Since that is objectively reckless, there is no excuse for the shomer to do this, even if the owner does it himself. So the Har HaKarmel actually asked the Kashis. He actually asked directly, how can we say shomer shomer to the shomer if the owner trusts him? That's okay. How is that consistent with the klal of b'shalohu rashoiv lo b'shal chaveru? And therefore, he's forced to reject the whole principle of the Rosh Yosef and say, really, that's not an excuse, except in the case of shomer shomer l'shomer, where we assume that the shomer knows that he's trustworthy. The truth is, the Har HaKarmel, though, is extremely shver, and it's hard to understand what he was thinking. He seems to have completely misinterpreted the principle of b'shalohu rashoiv lo b'shal chaveru. As we have seen before, b'shalohu rashoiv means just because the shomer does something to his own property, that doesn't give him the right to do it to the owner's property. That does not mean that if the owner himself does something, the shomer doesn't have the right. He seems to have understood b'shaloh as referring to the owner's shaloh rather than the shomer's shaloh, which is clearly not what it means in context of the Shulchan Aruch and all the earlier sources he's quoting. So I do not understand how the Har HaKarmel could possibly... It's not a kasha on his din. His din could still be correct. But the raya he brings from the din of b'shaloh rashai seems completely incomprehensible. Just discuss one last area of shomerim, which is also extremely relevant to halacha l'maaseh. As we mentioned, a shoel is chayav in for onsim, There are a couple of exceptions, but one common exception is Mesa Machmas Malacha. Mesa Machmas Malacha is very interesting. Unlike all the other dinim of Shomer we discussed tonight, there is no actual pasuk. There's no actual Yalfusa for this. It's a svara. The Gemara says in Bava Metzia on Daf Tzadi Vav Amud Beis that if the animal dies Machmas Malacha, the shoal is potter because he can say Lav Lokma Bekilsa Shelta. I didn't borrow it to keep it just put away all day. I borrowed it to use it. So if I used it and it got lost, don't hold me responsible. The Gemara is really very unclear. What does this mean? So it's not his fault. He borrowed it to use it. But it's an onus. So an onus is chayev. So what is the svara for this? Just because I borrowed it to use it, so what? But so it's not, why should it be different from an onus? So the poskim struggle to give various explanations for this din, and these various explanations have major ramifications lahalacha. One svara is the svara of the Ramban, and it's chedushim to the Gemara. He asked the Kash, he doesn't understand the Gemara. He says, why is this different from onus? The Ramban suggests what the Gemara really means to say is that if an animal dies doing the work that it was borrowed for, it is assumed that the animal was unsuitable for the purpose, and is a sort of implicit warranty of fitness, a fitness for the purpose made by the lender. And if the animal was not fit for the purpose, it's considered a pshia on the part of the owner. He shouldn't lend it out if it wasn't suitable for the job. Since it's his fault, because he gave an animal that was unsuitable and didn't explain this to the borrower, that's why we don't hold the borrower responsible. Now obviously, if you accept this rationale, this narrows down exceedingly the scope of Mesa Machmas Malacha. It would only apply in a case where we can reasonably, realistically assume that there was some level of negligence there was actually some unfitness on the part of the object and some level of negligence on the part of the owner for not telling this to the borrower. There is a machlokas, major machlokas between the Ramah and the Rush, which the poskim say is going to also involve this Ramban. The Ramah discusses a case. Ramah is brought by the Torah and Siman Shin Mem. The Ramah was discussing a case where somebody borrowed an animal with intent, explicitly stated, to take it on a certain road. And on that road, it was seized by bandits or eaten by animals. So we might have thought that was an onus, and the shoal is chayav for onus. And the Ramah says, no, that is Mesa Machmas Malacha, because even though it wasn't the Malacha itself that killed it, it was in the course of the Malacha, which was to travel on this road, it was taken. That is also considered Mesa Machmas Malacha. The Tur brings the Rush, who says, disagrees. He says, that's regular onus. He says, it could have happened without the Malacha too. So what does it have to do with the Malacha, he says. So that is considered an onus, and that is chayev, because it has nothing to do with the Malacha. And neither the Rosh nor the Ramat tell us directly how they understood the rationale of Mesa Machmas Malacha. The Beis Yosef in the Bet Kabbayah says that no, that the Ramat disagrees with the Rosh. The Ramat says that there aren't so many animals and bandits inside the city. That happens on more isolated areas. That is considered Machmas Malacha. Some people say even the Rush would agree in a case where the Metzias clearly was that the danger was much more frequent on the road, and they're only arguing about in principle how much they're only arguing in the question of how much greater must the danger be on the road, or they're arguing about whether there really is danger or not at home. But anyway, this is Machlokas Rush and Ramah. As I said, neither of them really explains how they understood Mesa Machmas Malacha. The Shach, though, says that the Ramban would clearly say that he is chayav. He says, because the Ramban is learning that Mesa Machmas Malacha is only if there was some pshia, some negligence, if there was some unfitness on part of the owner, some unfitness on the animal. He says, in the case of the Ramah, where the bandits grabbed the animal, there was nothing whatsoever wrong with the animal. There was no failure of disclosure on the part of the owner. So the Ramban would clearly hold that this is not Mesa Machmas Malacha and chayav. And the Ramah disagrees with the Ramban. The Rosh perhaps holds like the Ramban, and the Shach sides actually with the Ramban. The Shulchan Aruch actually passes like the Ramah, as we saw in the Bet Kabbayis, that he thinks the Ramah makes a lot of sense. The Ramah brings the sheet to the Rosh as a Yesh Cholkim, and the Shach sides with the Yesh Cholkim based on the Ramah. The Mesa Machmas Malacha has a very narrow scope, only if there was some unfitness on part of the animal and some failure to disclose that on the part of the owner. Nachman Ephraim also assumes that this is a Machlokas. Machanefraim Hilcha Sheilas Siman Dalad. Machanefraim, though, brings a, he also assumes that the Ramban and the Ramad are not consistent. But he also brings, he explains what would perhaps the Rosh hold as a Svaran Meis Machas, as what would the Ramah hold as a Svaran Meis Machas Malacha. So he brings the Lashon of the Mukhi Yosef, another Svaran of the Rishonim, nothing to do with Priyas Mashal. It's that any time someone gives away his animal knowing that this could happen to it, there's an understood implicit waiver of liability. Not that even though he uses the Lashon Pshia, he doesn't mean Pshia in the sense that the animal wasn't fit. He just means that there's a waiver of responsibility. You knew this could happen. You didn't explicitly stipulate that he should be liable. So that's a waiver of responsibility. It's not entirely clear why that shouldn't apply to all Ansim. You know that all Ansim are possible. Heart attacks are also possible. Why exactly is there more of a waiver for bandits on the road than for heart attacks is not entirely clear. But that's the second Svara. The third Svara is the Svara of Machanefraim himself. He says that he has a third idea. He says that there's an idea of Sheila Batos, that if it turned out that similar to the Ramban, that we assume that the Malacha, that it was unfit for the Malacha, but not that we care that the Mashal was Pashaya. Instead, we say that the Shoal can argue that I never would have agreed to take responsibility and do this had I known that it wasn't really suitable for the Malacha. So my whole Kabbalah Zacharias, my whole undertaking to be responsible and liable was based on a misapprehension, and therefore I should not be chayev for damages that happened because the animal wasn't right. So this basic question, though, the Ramban and the Machane Ephraim, who were both assuming there has to be something wrong with the object versus the other poskim who say not, this comes up very often. Very often someone borrows something and it breaks, but there was nothing wrong with it. It just broke. An accident happened to it. Something external happened to it. This is a major machlokes poskim, and there is no clear hachra in the poskim. There is one other interesting point, though, that we should note, which is that there seems to be a machlokes among contemporary poskim whether we can apply this sort of argument of Mesa Machas Malacha even if the Shoal himself essentially broke the object. Let's say, for example, he borrowed a car and he drove over a nail. It's not his fault. He couldn't be expected to see a small nail on the road, but it wasn't just list and grabbed it. He actually broke it. Is this Ones or is this Mesa Machas Malacha? This is not apparently not entirely clear. There's a very interesting discussion about these kinds of questions in the Sefer Kava de Kashaisa, the Chalkas Yov Sefer. He has a kasha. He wants to know, according to the Ramah, that when bandits grab it, since it happened during the Malacha, that's called Mesa Machas Malacha. He wants to know that if a woman borrows a garment, the Gemara Nida says, if a woman borrows a garment and it gets soiled from her bodily fluid, she is chayav to pay for it. He wants to know, why isn't that Mesa Machas Malacha? So in the modern edition of the Kavak de Kashaisa, they bring all kinds of terutz into this. Some poskim say that anything she does be a dayim, anything she does directly, there is no p'tur of Mesa Machas Malacha. Other poskim say, no, even in that case, it's Mesa Machas Malacha. And Tali Nussbaum, the well-known dayim in Eretz Yisrael, talks about a case of a person over the quoted in the notes there, talks about a case of a person who borrowed boots and stepped on a nail, similar to our car case before. And he does actually say that there would be a p'tur of Mesa Machas Malacha, according to the poskim who say that you don't need Priyas Mashal. Then there would be Meis Machas Malacha. If you do need Pshias Mashal, then obviously there was no Pshias Mashal. But he wants to say the boots case might be totally on the various poskim. And the truth is, even though I mentioned that this is mostly a question among the contemporary poskim, there is actually a raya to this sort of thing from the Sharam Melech, writing hundreds of years ago. Sharam Melech has a very interesting discussion in Chovel Amazik, Zayin Gimel, I think. He talks about a woman who borrowed a pot, and accidentally, it was a fleshic pot, and she cooked milchik in it, or vice versa, and she trafed up the pot, and you can't gasher it, it was charis, and whatever the issue was. So he has many interesting questions in Chosha Mishpat, Hilcha Shoal, and Mazik, about whether she can be held liable for this mistake or not. One of the spars he says is, all the way at the end, is that she's potter because of Mesa Machas Malacha. In other words, assuming you say it's not her fault, assuming we don't consider this negligence, she can argue that Mesa Machas Malacha. This is incredible. Even though she did it, and she could have avoided it, and she did it be a dayim, she stuck the cheese or whatever it was into the fleshic pot. Since it happened during the malach, there's certainly no pshias mashal there. If anything, it's pshias shol. Certainly not pshias mashal. Nevertheless, the Sharmelach says that it'll be totally on the machlokas, Rosh and Ramah. that Ramban, whether you need Pshias Mashal, if you don't need Pshias Mashal, if you hold like the Ramah, who says that even when bandits grabbed it on the road, you're still chayev, even though there was nothing unfit about the object, then we can argue that there is Mesa Machas Malacha over here too. So that would mean, L'chara Huad, in the cases we discussed, of the car that drove over the nail, or the boots that were torn by walking on the road, this is a solid raya, L'chara, that we could also possibly apply the rule of Mesa Machas Malacha to those sorts of cases.